Judiciary Committee will come to order. It is Monday, March the 10th, 2008. It's 1:33 in the afternoon. We have a quorum to conduct business. Senator McGuire is here, Senator Terrio, Senator Wilikowski, and myself, Senator French. And we've got two bills in front of us today. One's a brand new bill we haven't taken a look at, and the other one is one that we introduced last week, and we'll hear more about after we do HB 165, brought to us by Representative Ledoux, who is here in the room with us.
Yes.
Welcome, Representative Ledoux. Nice to see you. Please put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your presentation.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, my name is Gabrielle Ledoux. I represent House District 36, and thank you and members of the committee for hearing my bill today. HB 165 is a bill which rights an inadvertent wrong and promotes economic development in rural areas. The bill is an act relating to providing field accommodations for big game hunters. In 1996, much needed legislation was enacted to define who was a big game guide, outfitter, or transporter, and to provide regulations for licensing and for other considerations. However, in this legislation, there was no provision for the person who merely wants to rent his or her cabin to people who may or may not be hunting. There are many people in rural Alaska who have extra cabins or whose cabins are empty for part of the year. This bill will allow them to rent their cabins without falling into any of the regulations found in statute. It is difficult to generate economic growth in the rural areas, and this bill will enable people to provide a service and to make additional revenue. And members of the Big Game Commercial Services Board have worked with our office in order to craft a bill that will protect their interest while allowing others to do business. And I have with me my aide, Suzanne Hancock, who is here to field any questions that I'm not able to field.
Representative Ledoux, thank you. Questions for Representative Ledoux or her aide? Senator Terrio.
Thank you. And my apologies, I was gone over the weekend, so perhaps not done enough homework here to figure out if there's a quick answer to this question. But on, let's see, line 7 of the bill, page 1, it says that it doesn't apply to a person who has a permanent lodge, house, or cabin on private land. So I'm wondering why that existing language doesn't already take care of those people that are renting out that cabin on private land.
It does apply to a person providing for compensation at a permanent lodge, house, or cabin on private land.
What's the point of the bill? Okay. Well, it says, starting up above, the provisions of this chapter do not apply to a person providing for compensation or with the intent to receive compensation, only accommodations to a big game hunter in the field app, and then it says a private cabin. So am I getting lost in the double negatives here?
I believe.
Well, this is a new section. Yeah. Right? So that's the.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. It's amended to read outfit.
Currently.
I think that's the answer, isn't it? The question?
Maybe. Yes. I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yep, I'm with you. Okay. Senator McGuire has a question.
Well, just going to 30,000 feet, because this is one of those bills, the way it's drafted, and something to note for drafting, but it is drafted convoluted, a little bit convoluted, Senator Terrio, because of the way the original bill was written. We spent, I don't know, 3 hearings on this and resources, and 30,000 feet, this is the old stuff that came out of that Big Game Guide Task Force. It essentially said, on public lands, we are not going to allow guiding operations to come in and not have the requisite licenses to take in out-of-state folks and transport and hunt and take them hunting out of those lands. If you have your own private cabin, though, there were some folks that testified that inadvertently got swept into this. So you've got your own private cabin, and you want to be able to rent that out to whomever you want to be able to rent that out to, and you've got to now go get a transporter license. And we don't want to do that. And so that's what the point of the bill is. But it's convoluted the way it's written because it's addressing the old law.
Thank you. I mistakenly thought that that was existing language up there. So I see that it's a brand new section.
Is it just for the record, is it a transporter license you have to get, or is it an outfitter license, a guide outfitter license? There's two issues, right? One is for if you rent skiffs, you got to get a transporter license the way it is now. And if you rent your cabin, you have to get a guide outfitter license.
Chairman, there are a couple of different aspects here, and I think that is part of the reason why this is confusing, because it's the only thing this is trying to do is exempt people who don't want to rent skiffs. They're not going to be taking people out in the field. All they're doing is providing lodging. And that's and so I think that the drafter probably, in order to just more or less exempt folks out who just merely want to be landlords and not be guides, outfitters, or transporters, have a mechanism.
Okay, my question was based basically on the on this alleged legal opinion from January 17, 2007. Is it from 2007 or 2008? Is it a year old?
I believe it was 2007.
Okay, it's a year old. It just mentioned that if you rent a cabin, then you've got to have a guide outfitter license. If you rent a skiff, you've got to have a transporter license or a guide outfitter license. Let me ask you this. Is this bill just fixes the lodging prong of that problem? Is that correct?
That's correct.
It doesn't do anything about the skiffs. If you rent skiffs, you got to get a license.
Yeah.
Still.
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. And if you let's see, I had one other question about renting property.
And if you
go ahead.
And Mr. Chairman, and if you were to transport, let's say you had a group, four folks coming in from Alabama, if you were to then provide the transportation and bring them in addition to renting out as part of a package, that's also still a transporter license, mm-hmm. but it's just the renting out of the actual cabin.
If that's all you do, then you can now do that without having a guide outfitter license.
That's correct.
Under the bill.
That's correct.
It's simple, it's narrow, it's focused. It's not a broad exemption.
No. Very simple, narrow, focused, limited.
Okay. Let me just ask you generally if you've heard any opposition to the bill in your hearings on the House side or over here in the Resources Committee.
Chairman, not in any of the committee meetings, but I have heard from one gentleman at least that would like this applied also to leased properties as well as you know, your own private property. And we didn't really want to go there. Plus, leased properties have, especially properties that are leased by the federal government or by the state, have a lot of other requirements because it's considered a common property. And so we just wanted to narrowly have this applied to private property.
Keep it narrow. Other questions for Representative Ledoux or her staffer? I don't hear or see any. We do have two folks signed up to testify. Why don't we turn now to public testimony, and that may provoke more questions from the committee. But let's turn to Mr. Rick Metzger, who I think is the instigator, if that's the right word, of this bill. I mean that in the best way possible. Mr. Metzger, if you're on the line.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead and put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
Okay, my name is Rick Metzger. I'm a rural property owner from Kodiak Island, and it was my situation that I found myself into that I took to Representative Ledoux that prompted her to sponsor the bill, and I'm in agreement with everything that she said on it. The bill was developed with a great deal of effort and cooperation with the Big Game Commercial Services Board and Gabrielle's staff, and we wrangled over the issues of leased property and different things the questions that were just brought up, and we found that to narrow it to just private property accommodations of, you know, rental cabins or facilities was the easiest and most cleanest way to proceed, and it didn't develop any controversy. I would remind you that the bill has been supported by the Alaska Professional Hunters Association, the Alaska Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Association, and a broad spectrum of private citizens and do-it-yourself hunters who really enjoy the access of private accommodations in the field. And as Gabrielle said, there are very few economic opportunities for us folks that live in rural areas or have remote properties, and this is a real good one for us to, you know, generate some modest income from our properties. I could answer any questions that you have in regard to the development or how it, I found myself in the situation or anything, but that's all I have to say.
Mr. Metzger, I'll just ask you one question. Had the state begun to sort of proceed against you, if you will, or had you just discovered that the new law applied to what you were doing, and did you try to sort of prevent a problem from happening?
Well, I had been renting my cabins for several years, and in November of 2006, I was visited by the state troopers, and they said they had taken a new interpretation of the existing big game guide transporter regulation or statutes, and they had decided that only a big game guide or transporter who provides a transportation service to a cabin may rent a cabin in the field, and that they've considered private property to be classified as in the field. So they brought the situation to me. They didn't cite me with a violation, but they warned me that if I were to continue, I would be cited, and that prompted me to go to the Big Game Commercial Services Board and explain the situation and problem to them, and that prompted them to try to resolve the problem, and they worked real hard with us to try to come up with an answer.
Mr. Metzger, thank you. I don't have any other questions, and it doesn't look like the other members of the committee do either. At least two of the members here, just so you know, have heard the bill extensively in the past, and so that's it for you. Thanks so much for being here today.
Okay, well, thank you very much for letting me testify, and I urge you to pass the bill out of the committee. Thank you.
Next up, we have Mr. James Martin from Homer, who wanted to testify. Mr. Martin, can you hear my voice?
Yes, sir. I can hear you fine. Thank you.
Go ahead and put yourself on the record, and let's have your testimony.
You bet. James Martin. I reside in Homer, Alaska, and I am a big game hunter. And where would you like me to start?
Well, you can say whatever you want in the next 2 or 3 minutes. So you just go ahead.
Okay. Well, my biggest concern, you know, as a the licensed, you know, hunter here, big game hunter in Alaska, is that these services are available for us out there, kind of mirroring what Mr. Metzger had to say. Resources in this state are very hard for us residents to get out there and have access to our lands. I have a particular hunt coming up here this spring in Kodiak, where initially we were supposed to be taking a bow down on our hunt. That fell through, so that left me with an option of, you know, tenting it out on the beach and camp for a 15-day hunt, which is, you know, obviously very risky in that area. You're in bear country and everything else, and I come to find out that we do have these cabins that are available for hunters such as myself. So I looked a little bit more into it, and then I found out that, you know, we had these problems that we're discussing here today. I was hoping to, you know, just be heard, and, you know, I want all you folks to understand that, you know, people, I can't afford to go out on guided hunts. You know, they're very expensive. I do not want to take away anything from our licensed Alaska guides at all, but these are services that are just very valuable to us, and you know, the prices are a lot better. You know, just the safety issues are much better for us. It's an invaluable resource that I hope that we can get this worked out for, you know, people like Mr. Metzger and others that do have cabins that do want to provide for us resident and non-resident hunters to be able to access our lands. This particular trip for me is, you know, absolutely a once-in-a-lifetime hunt, and, you know, I've been dreaming about this since I was a kid, and I finally drew on this hunt, and been a little apprehensive here last week or so because, you know, it's slowly slipping away because we just, you know, I'm going with one other person, and we just didn't want to do the tent thing, and I found out there were cabins available, and I want to stress that, you know, that is a service that myself and other hunters share my same opinion that, you know, it would be really good for us to be able to have that, and I appreciate you guys, you know, letting me be heard.
Mr. Martin, thank you very much for your testimony.
You're very welcome.
Next up, we have Kelly and Dave Saltzgiver from Kenai.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Do both of you want to testify?
We do. I'm Kelly. I'm the dad.
Okay, go ahead, Kelly.
I want to testify in support of this also. I live in Kenai, and I've been here up in Alaska for 32 years, and I've hunted in Kodiak for 30 years. And I haven't missed a year hunting over there in 30 years. And the majority of it's been deer hunting. And so I speak as the last fellow did, the opportunities over there are shrinking down more and more. I've seen these, you know, I have six children, and I've tried to take all six of my children over there hunting and have this hunting experience over there in that beautiful island of Kodiak. And I can remember the days when 30 years ago you could hunt over there in the hundreds of dollars per person, and now it's way into the thousands. And, you know, an opportunity like what is happening with this bill, it allows one more where the expense is going to stay down. If this gets squeezed out, if a person would just look at going over there hunting, just the expenses of it, it's anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 a person to hunt deer. And I think this opportunity with having these cabins available like is put before you right now is just one more opportunity where I can continue to take my children, my grandchildren. I've hunted over there with my nephews, and it is an experience that is just unbelievable, and I hate to see this get totally squeezed out. And so I'm in totally support of this, and I really appreciate that you folks are listening to this and giving it your time. And I'll give the mic over to my son.
Okay, fair enough, young man. If you'd put your name on the record, the committee would be happy to hear your testimony.
All right, my name is Dave Saltgiver, and I've hunted over in Kodiak for probably 12 years. And, you know, I want to keep going back over there. And with this bill, you know, it cuts out a lot of my opportunity and, you know, expenses because, you know, I'm young, so it costs a little more money. But it's always a good place to go, and, you know, I'd like to take my family over there one day. And, you know, it would be a good bill to pass, you know, and I support this bill. So that's pretty much it.
Mr. Saltzgiver, thank you very much for testifying.
Thank you.
I have a question for the bill sponsor. Is the way it stands right now that you can rent a cabin on, like a state park cabin, stay in that cabin, and you obviously don't need to have a hunter, you know, outfitter license to use that if you're a hunter, and you don't, and the person that provides it, the state, doesn't have a hunter outfitter license. So are there two sets of rules right now, cabins on private land versus cabins on public land?
Well, on private land, you simply can't rent these cabins right now. And I mean, you're right. On the state land, there are cabins that the state rents.
Sure. So the state's letting this happen, and yet a private person cannot do the same thing that the state is.
That's right. The state isn't applying the same rules to its cabin that it's applying to private cabins.
I see. Other questions or comments? I don't hear or see any. We'll hold this bill over to the next hearing and move it out very soon. It looks like a real good bill. This is the last committee referral, and I don't mean to torture you, but I just want to make sure everything's squared away. So thanks very much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
And next up is, okay. Actually, let's take a short at ease. We're back on the record, and we are up for another hearing on SB 273. We introduced the bill last week on Wednesday and got an overview of the bill from its prime sponsor and his staffer. We're back with a full committee, or at least the fuller committee, and so let's go ahead and get an overview of the bill just to get ourselves oriented. Then I know we've got folks signed up that want to testify. Ms. Bustay, nice to see you. Put yourself on the record.
Thank you again.
Tell us what the bill
does. Thank you again for having me. And for the committee hearing this bill. My name is Kat Pustay. I am a staffer for Senator Wilikowski. And I just wanted to give a little overview of SB 273. This bill seeks to increase the penalties for the most heinous acts of animal cruelty and criminalizes participating in animal fighting. Currently, an Alaskan can torture or poison an animal, for example, and only be charged with a misdemeanor. This bill will not change the penalty for causing an animal's injury due to criminal negligence. 43 states and the District of Columbia have enacted felony-level penalties for atrocious acts of animal cruelty, and last week, Utah State Legislature passed legislation to do the same. Alaska ranks among the weakest states for animal protection. Research indicates that without intervention, people who abuse and kill animals are more likely to similarly abuse humans. Over 70% of pet owners entering domestic violence shelters state that their batterer had threatened, injured, or killed family pets. Many abusers have a history of animal abuse that precedes domestic violence toward their partner. We hope to discuss in this committee ways to strengthen the application towards domestic violence cases as well. In addition, animal cruelty is often an indicator that an individual poses a risk to himself or others. Studies show that animal abuse often predicts which children will exhibit antisocial and aggressive behavior later in childhood, adolescence, and adulthood. Serial killers and school shooters often have histories of animal abuse. This bill has been endorsed and supported by the Alaska State Veterinary Medical Association, the Municipality of Anchorage Animal Control Advisory Board, the Kodiak Police Department and Animal Control, the Commissioner of the Division of Animal Control in Fairbanks, numerous rescue groups, and individuals across the state, as well as the national groups, the Humane Society, the ASPCA, and the American Humane Society. We believe that passage of felony-level animal cruelty is critical in halting the progression of violent crime and in joining 44 other states in supporting these penalties. Just to respond, last week we talked a little bit about the Department of Law brought up concerns about proportionality in these cases versus the prosecution of domestic violence cases. We believe that certainly there is an issue with the way domestic violence cases are being prosecuted. That being said, our bill, the way the statute is written, when you are injuring an animal in these ways, you know, torturing, it says knowingly inflicting severe and prolonged physical pain or suffering on an animal. We see that as the same, as similar to the assault in the first degree, knowingly injuring or causing injury to a human. Assault in the first degree is penalized by as a Class A felony. We are saying when you do it to a human, it's a Class A felony. When you do it to an animal, it's a Class C felony. We do not intend to suggest that humans should be, or that crimes against animals should be punished the same as crimes against humans, but we do want to say that it's not acceptable in this state torturing an animal, doing these heinous acts against animals. So that's it.
Questions or comments for the bill sponsor or his staffer? I have one. Senator McGuire, go ahead.
It's okay. Through the chair, Kat, when you guys looked at this, did you go back through the record at all on the original bill that we enacted back in judiciary a couple years ago? And if you did, then what I'm trying to remember and track on, it was Chenault's bill, and prior to it, we had nothing regarding animal cruelty. And there was a debate that we had about it being a misdemeanor or a felony. And I'm just wondering if you looked at that record and if you could let the committee know. I thought we arrived at a compromise, and I just can't remember why.
Through the chair, Senator McGuire, I did look at the record. I think it was in your committee for hours and hours. So I know you're very familiar, or imagine you're very familiar with the bill. I can't say. I'd prefer to go back and look, and I can get that information for you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. One thing, I'm not sure we got on the record at the last hearing, but I wanted to get on the record here in the section that we're modifying is 1161.140, and there are under subsection C five defenses to animal cruelty. And one of the defenses is that it's part of scientific research covered by accepted standards. Mm-hmm. Two is that the conduct was constituted the humane destruction of an animal. Three, conformed to accepted veterinary or animal husbandry practices. Four, was necessarily incident to law, hunting or trapping activities. And five, is conformed to professionally accepted training and discipline standards. I'm imagining that it's the last one, number five, that allows us to have the Iditarod race, for example. It allows us to run dogs as hard as you can humanely run them all the way to Nome. But Ms. Bustay, I'll let you answer the question.
Yes, Senator French. Also, if you look down just two under that to E, this section does not apply to generally accepted dog mushing or pulling or practices or rodeos or stock contests.
Even more explicit still. Thank you for the clarification. Other questions or comments? I don't hear or see any. We do have folks lined up to testify. Why don't we go ahead and get that portion of the presentation over, and then we can talk about any amendments you may be thinking about. So we have a handful of people signed up to testify. Let's start in Juneau. Grace Danborn, welcome to the committee. You may know the drill, but put yourself on the record, your name and affiliation, then we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
In fact, do know the drill. Thank you. I'm Grace Danborn, and I work for the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. So on behalf of the 19 member programs throughout the state that provide domestic violence and sexual assault work to victims, children and women both throughout the state, I'd like to testify in support of Senate Bill 273. You might wonder why we're here. We're in the business of providing safe havens for women and children. You might say, are you not busy enough that you need to extend the same service to animals? And so I want to, Kat did a wonderful job of exploring this relationship between animal abuse and victim abuse, and I just wanted to highlight a few other statistics. We see through national studies that well over 70% of the women who come into shelter say that their animals have been threatened, killed, or significantly harmed by their batterers. And 87% of batterer-perpetrated incidents of pet abuse are committed in the presence of family members as a further means of exerting their control over family members. So although there haven't been similar studies conducted in Alaska, we know through anecdotal evidence that these similar patterns are prevalent throughout the state. And so for these reasons, we are in support of this bill. Thanks.
Stanmore, thank you. Any questions? I don't see any. Senator Wilkowski.
We, one of the ideas that we had, and I guess in pursuing this bill, that this was one of the surprising things that I had never realized, was this connection between domestic violence and animal abuse. And so we had drafted, and I'll present it later for discussion at least, an amendment that would say if a person injures an animal for the purpose of intimidating, threatening, or terrorizing another person, that would be a misdemeanor. Is that something that you would support or do you think would be helpful?
We support the bill as it's written. If there is interest in discussing that amendment further, we would certainly participate in that and be supportive of that.
Thank you. Next up is Chelsea Hicks. Ms. Hicks, you're here?
I'm not testifying.
Okay. Oh, that's right. There's an N there. When I got all the way across reading, I came to the answer, but thank you. Next up is Chana Lee, who does indicate that she wants to testify. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Lee, put yourself on the record and your affiliation. We'd be happy to hear from you.
My name is Hava Lee, and that's C-H-A-V-A, and it really is pronounced Hava.
Thanks for clarification and my apologies.
There you go. No problem. You're the first one, though, who's ever gotten it wrong. Just
now,
a joke. That's
now
a kidding.
I feel really good.
Of course. That's a joke. I'm the executive director of the Gastineau Humane Society, and the Gastineau Humane Society has a contract with the City and Borough of Juneau to provide animal control services, so as such, I personally oversee the animal neglect and cruelty investigations. Most cases of suspected animal cruelty turn out to be cases of neglect. Though the neglect can be severe, these cases can be resolved through education and a program of ongoing support by animal control, by animal care organizations and professionals. But the intentional harming, maiming, mutilation, and torture of animals falls into a category that is far different. Studies conducted over the past 25 years by a wide variety of different disciplines have shown a definite link between animal cruelty and human violence. Animal cruelty crimes are gruesome. Whether it is slitting the belly of an animal and tacking its intestines to the floor while it rushes around in fear and agony, intentionally setting an animal on fire, or breaking an animal's bones, these are crimes where the penalty should go far beyond the slap on the wrist our laws now provide. Animal fighting is not a sport. The callous, cruel, bloodthirsty nature of dog fighting is abominable. Dogs are trained to attack, and they do this not out of loyalty, but out of fear and bred aggression. Animal fighting is the epitome of a community of people, whether urban or rural, large scale or small, rich or poor, that has reduced itself to the lowest common denominator. Turning a blind eye to animal cruelty condemns all of us to the inevitable results that come from a society that does not protect vulnerable living creatures. In closing, I would like to ask you to include provisions that protect veterinarians and their staff during a cruelty investigation and when providing testimony. Without their professional expertise, most of these cases would not stand a chance in court. Without immunity for good faith reporting of suspect animal cruelty, many, if not most, veterinarians are unwilling to provide testimony that could and has put their licenses and their livelihood in jeopardy. We ask that you do the right thing and support 273 and move it out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Lee? Could you expound on the last part about the veterinarians and the need for immunity, and which prong of the statute captures them, or
well, they're really under the Veterinary Practices Act. Veterinarians are specifically prohibited from providing testimony that would be considered of a client veterinarian relationship. So if someone went to a veterinarian, for example, or someone was a dog was meant, or a cat, a guinea pig, any animal was taken to a veterinarian, and this veterinarian was that animal's owner's client, if the animal's owner was their client, they could not now testify against that client without breaching client patient privilege. And what has resulted, and I've seen this as a matter of fact over the course of the 7 years I've been at the Gastineau Humane Society, and also in talking with other animal control agencies throughout the state, that they simply cannot get a veterinarian to testify. And veterinarians that have testified have been prosecuted, and their licenses have been put in jeopardy.
Ms. Lee, I think Senator Wilkowski has something to say on that subject.
I think there's a bill that addresses this filed in the House by Representative Gardner.
I've been following Representative Gardner's bill, and it seems that it's going to be rolled into Representative Newman's bill. But I read it this morning, and Kat sent me some information about it, and I couldn't see where the specific language had been added. But if that language has been added, I would encourage you, when it comes over to the Senate, to vote for it, because when it goes to court and we've taken these things to court, the very first thing that the judge will ask is, where's your veterinarian's testimony on this? And without the testimony of a veterinary professional, whether it's a veterinarian or their staff, the case goes nowhere from there.
I'll just comment. I'm astonished. I mean, I don't doubt you. I'm just astonished. I mean, I don't think that the veterinarian client privilege is one that's recognized under Alaska evidentiary law, but apparently it's one that's recognized within their own sort of guild, if you will. And that gets the vet in trouble with his own licensing authority.
Well, if once these things go to court, of course, they're public knowledge. And if you have your personal vet testifying against you for things that they've seen, those are the cases where veterinarians find themselves vulnerable.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like I say, I'm not doubting it. I'm just astonished that. That's the case, but you learn something new every day. Other questions or comments? Ms. Lee, thank you. Next up is Chris Ashenbrenner. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Welcome to the committee. Please put yourself on the record, and we'd be happy to hear your
Thanks.
Testimony.
I'm Chris Ashenbrenner. I'm the executive director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. quite the mouthful. The Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault has not yet had a chance to meet and have an opinion on this bill. And so the Council has no official position either way right now, but they are going to meet this week. So I will get back to you on what that outcome is. And that meeting might be kind of interesting because I will now take off my hat as Council ED and tell you my opinion as an advocate for domestic violence and my work working with domestic violence. And so what the Council will probably hear is our chair is Rick Savodny, and he will be probably have the disproportionality argument, and I will have the advocate argument, and we'll have the Council decide what they're going to do later this week. But let me, if I could, give you my personal opinion. And I'm a little embarrassed at my notes. If I don't make sense, please stop me. In my personal experience, from a kind of a total layperson perspective, advocate perspective, people who harm animals also are very likely to be harming the people in their homes that they purportedly care about and love. And they're very likely to be harming them in order to control them. I too was surprised when I became an advocate to have people who would not leave their homes because their little dog might get hurt, or people who did some really horrible things in their lives because of the threat of their cat being thrown against the wall. People are controlled by use of harm against animals. It's heinous. So people who are hurting animals are likely also to be hurting the people they love. People who torture animals are also likely to be committing serious crimes against people in a domestic violence situation, as well as generally in society. They're dangerous people, and studies show that. I think our society should say this is wrong, just as we say domestic violence is wrong. And I think our penalties should show that the worst of these crimes should reflect our feelings that these are wrong. And as to the legalese, not being an attorney, presenting in front of a group of attorneys, I'm not sure how to tell you to do that, but it should be wrong. It should be very, very wrong if you're torturing animals, if you're hurting them purposefully to such a degree. I also believe that our penalties should reflect our strong stance when the assaults are made against the people. And so some people say, well, we shouldn't take such a strong stance on animal cruelty when people are not necessarily, when people are hurt, those penalties aren't necessarily as strong. I personally think we need to fix that system too. And there are some laws, right, or some bills right now to enhance penalties for domestic violence offenses, especially repeat offenses. So I think that the whole system needs to be right. And just because part of it isn't working right, it doesn't make it that we shouldn't make another part of it right, if that makes any sense. So I'd like to see us enhance our penalties for these kind of crimes across the board so that we as a society say this is wrong. And if you do it, you're going to spend some time away from other people. You can't hurt them. And thirdly, back to the earlier comment about a proposed amendment, I personally feel that we should strengthen our laws. If an animal or hurting an animal is used as part of a coercive or threatening or intimidating action against a person, especially a person you're supposed to care about in a domestic violence situation, that itself is a penalty on its own, or perhaps an aggravated sentencing. But personally, I'd rather see it as a separate penalty. So the penalty then involves the animal and the person. So I... That's my personal opinion, and based on experience as an advocate. You wouldn't believe how many times animals are part of domestic violence situations, and also be aware that children are in many of these situations, and they are learning that behavior by watching it.
Eschenbrenner, thank you for your testimony. I don't see any questions. Let's turn now to the telephone line where we have Carol Kleckner in Fairbanks. Ms. Kleckner, can you hear my voice?
Yes, I can.
If you go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record, we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
My name's Carol Kleckner. I've been a volunteer at the Fairbanks North Star Borough Animal Shelter for over 6 years. I'm a 23-year Alaska resident. I would really like to see the passage of Senate Bill 273 to make cruelty to animals a felony. Alaska has some of the weakest cruelty laws in the nation, yet we are the mushing capital of the world. I personally have sled dogs, and I sprint mush and ski jor. I'm not a member of PETA or HSUS, but feel that we really need to come to grips with what is really happening to our voiceless companions up here. In the Fairbanks area, where I have been a volunteer for 6 years, I helped to rehome the huskies there at the shelter and have seen many emaciated and very mistreated dogs come through our borough. Since I've been volunteering, not one cruelty case comes to mind that has been prosecuted. This is through the service of 3 shelter managers plus an interim manager. I feel that our borough would really love to prosecute the worst cases, but seems that their hands are tied because of such weak laws. Why take the time and the money to charge a person and take them through the court system only to give them a slap on the hand and a misdemeanor charge? We really need the charge as a cruelty, as a felony. The state law for dog fighting is a felony, yet the owner of other animals can starve them to death. And I personally have 2 dogs from different people that were brought into the shelter nearly dead from starvation, neglect, and cruelty. And these people are still able to have dogs and do with them as they please. If this bill is passed, then it will strengthen the borough's ability to charge the people and set an example that this is a kind of treatment that will not be tolerated in Alaska. Thank you.
Ms. Kleckner, thank you. And we have a question for you from Senator Theriault.
Thank you. I'm not sure how passage of this legislation would increase the prosecutions. This legislation increases the penalty. But if there's a problem with prosecutions actually being brought, it's a problem with the current way the current statutes operate, not with the penalty that's dished out. And so I'm not sure that passage of this bill actually gets at the problem that you stated in your testimony.
Well, I think the passage of this bill will help, because I think that if people are given a stronger penalty for cruelty, then the borough is more likely to penalize these people that are having such neglect to their animals.
Thank you.
Ms. Kleckner, thanks for being here. I don't see any other further questions for you.
Okay, thank you.
Next up is Shauna Anderson from Valdez. Ms. Anderson, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead and state your name and affiliation for the record, and we'd be happy to hear your testimony.
My name is Shana Anderson. I have been the animal control officer and animal shelter manager in Valdez since 1989. I also am past president of the Alaska Animal Control and Care Association, a state organization. A lot of what I wanted to say has already been said, so I'm probably going to repeat myself a little bit here. Anyway... While most cruelty investigations are neglect cases that are resolved through educating the pet owners, there are cases of intentional cruelty that demand more stringent action. Alaska is only one of 7 states that does not have felony animal cruelty laws. This proposed bill amendment will provide this option in the most horrendous cases. Alaska is unique from most other states in the fact that there are great stretches of land where no animal control and no where state troopers are too overwhelmed with their everyday cases to find time to deal with animal cases. But we are not unique in the fact that we still have our share of hoarding cases, physical abuse to animals, animal torture, and animal neglect and abandonment. While some cruelty cases make the headlines in our major newspapers, many more happen around the state that don't. For instance, in 2007 in Valdez, we had 23 cases of animal abuse and neglect reported. Of these, about 6 cases were examples of intentional animal cruelty. These cases cases range from hoarding to the physical abuse of animals. I think the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony penalty is whether it's an act of cruelty that has been committed in an intentional or knowing manner. I also believe that professional law enforcement people are able to tell the difference when charging a person under animal cruelty provisions. The well-known facts are that animal cruelty is strongly linked to other forms of family violence. Children who are abused may abuse animals in return, and adults may abuse family pets as a way to control other family members. Animal abuse can be an early sign of future criminal behavior. Most serial killers and school shooters have stated they started by torturing and killing animals. I think that everyone feels strongly that all types of family violence, be it to humans or animals, should carry felony penalties. Strong animal cruelty laws are a first step towards stemming both future human and animal violence in our state. Thank you.
Ms. Anderson, thank you. Any questions for Ms. Anderson? One question from Senator Terrio.
Thank you. The prosecutions there in your jurisdiction, is that all state prosecutions?
Most of them, well, it's kind of mixed. It depends on the, you know, how bad the case is. So the police department, which I work for, we have prosecuted both ways.
So you
have tried to. A lot of times the animal cruelty violations go along with other violations, and a lot of times the animal cruelty is dropped, but we still try in the most horrendous cases to, you know, prosecute.
So that, and I'm sorry, you're in Valdez, is that correct?
Yes.
So they have local ordinances.
We have local ordinances also against cruelty, but it does not carry, of course, it won't carry misdemeanor or felony charges. The local ordinance leaves us with the highest penalty is a $300 fine, period.
Okay, and can you give us a rough estimate of the number of cases of abuse or cruelty? What's the percentage that are charged either under local ordinance or state law?
Well, I would say most are probably local right now. I think that change of this may change that. Changing this, penalties under the state. What it would do is create another tool. And that's what it would do, basically, for law enforcement people. It would keep, the other thing that it will do is somebody could commit animal cruelty and be charged under the local statutes in Valdez, move to Wasilla, for instance, commit it all over again, where it would not ever even show up in Wasilla that person had been prosecuted here in Valdez. Under the state cruelty charges, that would, you know, that probably wouldn't happen. It would show up if it was a felony charge. So it's just another tool that we could use to stop this from happening. Also, I think it would be a message to people that we are really, really serious. You know, it's not a slap on the hand to beat your dog, that we are really, really serious. And personally, I've seen some really horrendous cases over the last 19 years. So that's why I feel so strongly, and I do feel very strongly about doing this.
Thank you.
Ms. Anderson, thank you. I don't see any other questions for you. That concludes the people who are signed up to testify on SB 273. Is there anyone else in there here in the audience that wants to testify? Anyone else online that wants to testify? All right. Senator Wilikowski.
Mr. Chair, based on what we had learned in preparing this bill, I have an amendment that I prepared that I'd like to offer at this point.
And this is amendment number... /C.1. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you're moving the amendment?
I am.
I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Why don't you tell us what it does?
This amendment states that a person who knowingly kills or injures an animal with the intent to intimidate, threaten, or terrorize another person is committing a misdemeanor. And again, we all heard the testimony. Approximately 70% of domestic violence incidents, 70% of the women who report being victims of domestic violence are report also having animals abused in their households. And I think this is another tool for prosecutors to use and to say it's simply unacceptable to intimidate or terrorize someone by using an animal to do that.
I will just speak from my own past as a prosecutor and mention that I'm personally aware of several cases where a domestic violence assault is accompanied by kicking, throwing, or otherwise hurting animals in the course of the assault. I wouldn't say it happens in every domestic violence assault, but it happens enough for it to be fairly well recognized, just as we've heard from the domestic violence community that they hear about these incidents. I just know from having been in court on DV assault cases that an injury to an animal happens with depressing regularity in the course of domestic violence assaults. So that's just a little piece of background on that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Terrio.
Up on line 4 of the amendment, it says, you know, the section that we're amending, a person commits cruelty to animals if, and it seems like we've got this covered already in number 1, don't we? Knowingly inflicts severe or prolonged physical pain or suffering on the animal. I mean, I understand you're trying to get at this issue of using that action to intimidate somebody, but commits cruelty to animal is the physical action that's taking place, not necessarily the intent. And so I'm just wondering if the drafter had any suggestions on the advisability of this. I appreciate the fact that it was drafted in our legal shop, but it seems like we're just kind of repeating number 1.
I'll just jump in, and it strikes me that this is something less than what's suggested by number 1. And the incident that comes to mind for me was a case where a guy came home from having been at the bar all day. His wife's at home. He comes home angry. He begins to yell at her, beat her, pushes her down the stairs, throws a vacuum cleaner down the stairs on her, and in the course of running down there to continue the assault, kicks the dog out of the way and says, "I'm going to treat you like I just did that dog." Now, he didn't inflict severe and prolonged physical pain and suffering on the dog, but when he kicked the dog and the dog yelped, and he points at his wife and says, "I'm going to treat you like I treated the dog," he's, you know, sort of increased it up to the next level. And I think this is the kind of situation that the statute's trying to get at. I don't think you have to, you know, it wouldn't have to be over a course of several days. You wouldn't have to break the dog's leg. But, you know, when you pick up an animal and hold it by the scruff of the neck and you know, start to twist its head or something, and you make that in a threatening gesture towards your spouse or your partner, I think that's highly frightening, and I think that's the idea behind the amendment, but I'll let Senator Wilkowski jump in.
That is the idea, and actually, we haven't discussed the bill as a whole, but it's very difficult to prove knowingly inflicts severe and prolonged physical pain or suffering. And actually, if you, just to kind of expound upon your example, Mr. Chair, if you came home and your wife, and you were fighting with your wife and you took your gun out and you shot your dog, you actually technically don't even meet the requirements of animal cruelty under this bill. But if you're doing it to knowingly kill or injure an animal with the intent to intimidate or threaten or terrorize, you capture that under that provision. You have to prove severe and prolonged physical pain or suffering, which can be difficult to do under A1. And so the changes that we're making to the bill as a whole are really, it's got to be heinous activity that you that is being done to the animal. By adding that DV component, knowingly killing or injuring an animal with the intent to intimidate, threaten, or terrorize, we're really taking into account that's more probably closely aligned to a domestic violence issue where women are terrorized and threatened by their spouse. And so that's what we're really getting at with that. I think you're really getting at two different things.
Let me just hold that thought for a second. I've got one other person who wanted to testify, but I would need to find out. This is Kiki Sterling in Fairbanks. Were you wanting to testify on the bill as a whole or on the amendment that we're discussing?
Can you hear me?
I can.
On the bill as a whole.
Okay, then we're just going to have to ask you to hold off because right now we're on an amendment.
Okay.
Thanks so much. And Senator Terrio, go ahead.
Well, I guess, and perhaps you discussed this at length last week when I was gone, but would that section really belong in the DV section of the statutes? I mean, if in fact, you know, taking a handgun out and just, you know, one shot, the dog is dead, is that not cruelty? If that doesn't trigger number one, then it doesn't fall under cruelty. But now we're saying knowingly kills will fall under cruelty, I guess.
And because we haven't discussed the bill as a whole, what the bill, at least I haven't, number one, I mean, this bill is designed to get at the most heinous acts of animal cruelty. And yeah, quite frankly, under our current law, if you walk into your house and you shoot your dog or you have a dog in your property and you shoot it, or there's cases all over the state. Someone went and shot a bunch of reindeer up in the valley. People shooting other people's dogs, things like that. It's not a crime. It's typically not a crime at all. And so the structure of our bill, this is still probably one of the weaker bills in the country, but what we're saying is for the real heinous acts, if someone is torturing, if someone is intentionally inflicting severe and prolonged pain, that is a crime. Now, this amendment adds another provision that, you're right, it is separate. It's more directed at the DV angle. And you're seeing states start to do this. Now that this link between animal cruelty has been so closely related to domestic violence, we did discuss this with the drafter. We feel it's appropriate to have this in here because there is a link between the animal, but we're also linking it with domestic violence, where the studies show there is this stunning correlation.
I can see, Senator Terrio, I understand your point, and I can kind of see it either way. I can see, you know, just in my mind, I can see it as sort of a more of an assaultive towards a person type of crime. On the other hand, it's the animal that's been injured. On the other hand, you know, it's the person who's been frightened. But I guess I'll defer to the bill sponsor and the drafter for its placement in the statutes. But I think it's a point worth debating. Other comments? Why don't we take a short at ease? Let's go back on the record. We do have an amendment before us, C.1, amendment number one, will stylize it, by Senator Wilkowski. At this point, I'm going to remove my objection to Senator Wilkowski's amendment. Is there further objection? Hearing and seeing none, the amendment is adopted. That brings us the bill back before us, and that makes Ms. Sterling's testimony now relevant. Ms. Sterling, thanks for waiting, and if you go ahead and state your name, your affiliation, and give us your testimony, that'd be wonderful.
Thank you very much. My name is Kiki Sterling, and my husband and I are running an animal refuge, or we're trying to get it up and running, called Thistledown Animal Refuge. So I'm here to represent us and our view on the bill.
Please proceed.
My husband and I have been rescuing and rehabilitating dogs for the last 10 and a half years, and only recently have become official. And I'm here to support Senate Bill 273 because Alaska is one of only seven states, I believe, that doesn't have a felony charge for animal abuse and torture. Alaska has one of the highest rape rates, domestic abuse rates, murder rates, and we're one of the worst animal welfare states in the union. And I don't believe these are things to be proud of. It takes on average a year for a dog to become rehabilitated when it's been either horribly abused physically, mentally, or severely neglected. I do realize that this bill doesn't include definitions of or punishments for neglect, but neglect is as big a problem in Alaska as abuse is, and in many cases the line between them is barely visible. In Fairbanks a couple years ago, a guy went on a rampage one night in an apartment and beat his black lab almost to death with a pipe. Neighbors who tried to intervene were threatened. When the cops came, they arrested him on charges of disorderly conduct, but he was never charged with animal cruelty. The lab was then taken to a clinic, and a rescue group put hundreds of dollars into surgeries and care. It took two or three surgeries, but the dog lived and is now living with a good family, minus a chunk of his skull and an eye. There's no good reason why this guy wasn't charged with animal abuse. The neighbors said they could hear the dog crying and him screaming for 20 minutes. And the guy and other people like him commit acts of cruelty upon animals every day in Alaska, and they get away with it. There will never be an end to abuse, torture, or neglect if there aren't laws that are strong enough or can't be enforced. I would urge anyone who is undecided about whether Senate Bill 273 is prudent at this time to look around them and take count of all the animals they know who are well cared for and loved, and then look again and see how many are not. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Sterling, thank you. And we do have a question for you from Senator Terrio.
Yes, do you have any further information about why the gentleman was not charged?
I don't. I'm not sure why animal control or law enforcement didn't seek any sort of prosecution.
Thank you, Ms. Sterling.
Thank you.
With that, Senator Terrio, please proceed.
And I think that illustrates part of my concern is there's a problem with the prosecutions, and whether it's that the prosecutors have to triage, you know, what they actually bring charges on, or the police have to triage, you know, who they arrest, or the courts have to triage who we can afford to put in jail. There seems to be a problem there that we're not getting at by just increasing the penalties. And, you know, I want to be careful that if you do increase the penalties, you actually force people to mount a stronger defense now. Well, what I may have pled to before because it was a misdemeanor, I'm not going down for a felony now, and so you push back even harder. And I'd like to talk to Ms. Carpinetti a little bit about to try and find out what's the problem here as far as bringing up, you know, even a charge against a case that seemed like it was pretty cut and dry. If the neighbors tried to intervene, they could hear for 20 minutes.
Missing part of a skull, right?
Something's wrong there.
Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, just to respond to that, and you're probably in the best position of all, Mr. Chair, you know, as a prosecutor, you're more likely to prosecute felonies. And if you start out, if your base is a misdemeanor, and you're a prosecutor and you say, okay, if I prosecute that person for a misdemeanor, they're probably going to fight it because there's nowhere to plea it down to. Whereas if you start out with a felony, then at least you have that bargaining chip and you can plea it down to a misdemeanor. So I think this gives you probably will see more prosecutions by increasing to a felony, but you're probably in the better position to speak on that, Mr. Chair.
I can kind of see it either way. I share Senator Terrio's concern about the sort of general lack of resources and the sort of historically low numbers. On the other hand, you know, knowingly inflicting severe and prolonged physical pain or suffering on an animal is outrageous, and so you. You sort of wonder whether you don't increase the odds of prosecution by making it more severe and thus more attention getting. But the balance of the workload in prosecutors' offices probably isn't going to be changed by the passage of this bill, and I think that may be the root problem. Nevertheless, it doesn't mean we shouldn't do the right thing. Just because the system can't respond, that may be, you know, the next step is to get more money for that fighting that particular crime. Good debate. We're missing one member. We've got some little more looking into the history of the bill and what happened back when it was wrestled with in years past. So with that, I think we'll set this bill aside for today. There's nothing else to come from the committee, so we will stand in adjournment.